I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ. I found victory over addictions, the effects of sexual trauma, and deep grief. And my name is Aaron. I grew up in a loving Christian home. I was the only girl between two boys. My mom often jokes that I am the rose between two thorns. Did I have middle child syndrome. We were an extremely close-knit family. I grew up in the Church of Christ, which is a pretty strict type of church. I was the granddaughter of not one, but two preachers. So to say that I was expected to behave would be an understatement. I attended a private school at one of those churches to start my schooling. Girls were expected to wear dresses that were not to be short, to the knee at its shortest. If any teacher or adult was concerned about the length, I was expected to kneel and the dress should touch the ground. If it didn't, I was sent home. Boys were expected to wear a collared shirt and keep their hair above the ear. My dad was the high school math teacher at the same school, and I would often be sitting in my dad's class for one reason or another. This means I was often around older boys and had crushes on the older boys, even though I was very young and had no idea this was the start of a pattern for me. I was daddy's little girl, but dad worked a lot trying to provide for a family of five. My mom worked too, but as kids often went to work with mom as she was an in-home caregiver to a quadriplegic woman who had become like family. We didn't have a lot of money or even a stable home. We moved a lot, moving for a hopefully better job for my parents, but I never really knew as a kid we were pretty poor. Even though we were homeless for a short time, living in tents in my aunt's backyard, I didn't know we were poor because my dad kept us busy with lots of free activities whenever he had time. A favorite pastime was hiking the Columbia River Gorge waterfalls. We would make a day of it, hiking and sometimes swimming and picnicking along the way. My mom would often just stay in the car and wait for us to come back while she worked her crossword puzzle fill-in book. We didn't know it at the time, but my mom was clinically depressed and doesn't even remember much of our childhoods. I don't blame her for it now, but we didn't get along when I was younger. I often felt left out or overlooked by my mom. I felt she always favored the boys and didn't want me. Relatives even said things like that to me, saying, "It's not right that your mom favors the boys," placing further seeds of contempt for my mom. My dad tried making up for my mom's lack of attention to me and spent extra quality time with me. He came home one night after work and asked me if I would like to go on a special daddy-daughter date with him, and of course, I answered with a loud yes. He instructed me to go put on my best dress so we could go, so I quickly got my pretty light blue dress on, and we left. He took me to a ballet of the Nutcracker for a wonderful, magical night. Even though my dad tried showing me extra attention, and I could talk to him about literally anything, including trouble I had gotten myself into, I was a brat, and it seemed the more strict my parents were, the more I wanted to explore the great big world unknown. I developed young and was sexually abused multiple times. As a child, at the age of 8 was the first time I could remember. Although I found out later I had been abused at the age of 2 by my autistic cousin. The first one I can remember was a friend of my parents from church. This man and his wife would sometimes take me out for ice cream or take me over to their house to play games or watch the latest Disney movie to let me get away from my brothers for a while. I had been to their house many times with my parents because we would go there as family for family game nights. So I knew their house was fun and jumped at the opportunity. This time it was different. This time, whenever his wife wasn't around, he would hug me too long and inappropriately touch me and even made me touch him. I didn't tell anyone because I loved his wife and I just knew it would devastate her. Plus, I knew my dad would kill him and end up in prison. These were the thoughts my little 8-year-old brain had. This abuse happened several more times because I was afraid to tell anyone. This began a deep mistrust in men. There was even a short time that I was afraid of my dad and wondered if all men were like this, but thankfully it wasn't long before I realized my dad would never do those things to me. I was relieved when my parents said we were moving from Eugene to Portland and I could get away from my abuser. I was around 12 when we moved and had become very flirtatious and had many boyfriends, sometimes more than one boyfriend at a time. I was raped at the age of 13 by a boyfriend, and after that became very promiscuous because I felt it didn't matter anymore. I had been deflowered, so I might as well have fun now. I looked for love in all the wrong places. Any attention was what I craved. I didn't tell my dad I wasn't a virgin until I was 15 and was caught having sex with my boyfriend by his mother, and she said either I told my parents or she would. So I asked my dad to come to my high school because I needed to talk to him and didn't want listening ears. So he came. I told him I had lost my virginity to this boy and that we had even had unprotected sex. He was, of course, disappointed in me but didn't freak out. I loved him for that. Although he was more inclined to write me a letter and spell out just how much I had broken his and my mom's hearts with this news. I had asked him not to tell my mom, but he said he needed to so that she could take me to the doctor and have me tested for a whole gamut of things from pregnancy to STDs and get me started on some birth control. As long as I wasn't pregnant. I wasn't, thank God. They started me on a birth control shot that only had to be taken every 3 months or so, but it made me gain a lot of weight and made my emotions go crazy. Not long after that, when both parents were at work and I was left with my brothers, I left a note saying that I was running away because I felt no one loved me and that there wasn't enough room in this family for me. I knew my dad had ridden his bike to work that day and I would be long gone before anyone even knew I was gone, or so I thought. Not long after I left, my brother found my note and called my dad at work. I had only been gone about 15 minutes and was just up the road waiting for my boyfriend to come meet me when my dad rode up on his bicycle and found me and said, "Let's go home, young lady." I still, to this day, have no idea how he knew where I was or how he got to me so quickly. All I know is that God was protecting me from making some really big mistakes. My running away, or poor attempt thereof, prompted another heartfelt letter from Dad where he explained to me that love is not divided with each member of the family, but rather multiplied and overflows with each new member. I hated disappointing my dad, and I began to try to behave and not disappoint my dad until April 1st, 1999, when my parents came home and sat me down and told me that my dad had stage 4 esophageal cancer and only had 6 months to a year to live. I was crushed, but my dad was a jokester throughout my life and often said, if he didn't tease you, it meant he didn't like you. So I thought, well, it's April Fool's Day. This has to be a joke. So I said, yeah, right. April Fool's, right, Daddy? To which he replied with tears in his eyes, no, honey, it's not a joke. I wish it was. My dad needed 24-hour care, so I stepped up to the job. And my mom and I took care of him in shifts. I fed him through his feeding tube, emptied vomit buckets, and even gave him morphine through his PICC line. It was impossibly hard watching my best friend and hero melt away into a shell of a man. He died 8 months after diagnosis when I was 16 years old, and this began a very long period of me being angry at God for taking away the one person I believed loved me. The next year after that, I found out I was pregnant at 17 years old. I also found out at my 15-week ultrasound that something was wrong with my baby. They thought she might be disabled and began to do more testing, which included an amniocentesis, which was a genetic test that gave a clear diagnosis. They told me my baby was a girl, and I instantly named her Angel Rose. Then they told me she had something rare called triploidy or trisomy 13, which means instead of having two chromosomes in each set of chromosomes, she had three, and this was not compatible with life. And I should terminate the pregnancy right then. They also told me that most women miscarry before they even know they're pregnant when the baby has this. I refused to terminate the pregnancy and told them they could be wrong and that they were not God and that he had a plan for me and this baby. At 26 weeks, I was the size of a full-term, even overdue woman, and the doctors told me I had to be induced because my life was now in danger. So I immediately checked into the hospital where I was induced and gave birth to my beautiful Angel Rose. They warned me she would not look like a regular baby and that she might be discolored and look like she has Down syndrome. She was alive when I gave birth, and yes, she looked a little different, but to me, she was beautiful. She lived 1 hour, and she got to be held and loved on by my whole extended family that was in the delivery room with me. She passed away shortly after I got her back in my arms. I found peace knowing that my dad was in heaven waiting for her already. The year after that, my favorite uncle died of cancer. I started smoking cigarettes and drinking and partying and smoking marijuana, trying to self-medicate and numb the pain of such loss and low self-esteem. I later had two healthy babies, one boy, now 23 years old in the Army, married recently, and one girl, now 22 years old, married a year and a half, and due to have my first grandbaby in August, making me a Mimi. She's having a girl. I went into preterm labor from 5 months on with both of them and was often in the emergency room and labor and delivery to stop labor. They often gave me morphine to relax me in my uterus to stop labor. They said it was safe for the babies. This started a pattern of hypochondria and attention seeking for me. I would often go to the emergency room for different aches and pains. While I do live with pain daily, I realized much later I was terrified I would leave my kids without a parent like I was left. My health problems and mental instability compelled my children's dad to petition for temporary custody, and my kids went to live with him, although I got them every other weekend. I spiraled down and became very suicidal. I even attempted suicide several times. I was in and out of the mental hospitals for years and was put on so many medications that I felt like a shell of a woman. I truly believed the world and especially my children would be better off without me and that I was just a waste of space and oxygen. Many years and many abusive relationships and self-destructive behaviors went by before I met my current husband. He began to help me rebuild my self-esteem and self-worth and helped me to see things differently. I could still barely talk about my dad 15 years later without crying, and my husband asked me if I thought my dad would be happy knowing I was still so sad. It was like a light bulb was switched on, so I made a choice to be happy no matter what. I stopped taking all those medications with doctor approval and began a long road of healing and change. For the first time in 15 years, I was happy. I started going to church again and rededicated my life to God. We got married in Hawaii. Things were starting to look up until the effects of addiction started affecting my life and challenging my marriage. My husband was an alcoholic and would binge drink on the weekends. He was mean when he was drunk. I was devastated, wondering why I was given happiness just for it to be ripped away. My husband and I were separated, and I felt like a complete failure. I began using drugs. I went from never doing any hard drugs to doing all of them in a very short period of time. I was even homeless for a time, living under an overpass, never really sleeping, but listening to the rats chew the trash in the bushes around me. While I was completely destroying myself, my husband decided to get sober and went to AA. He wasn't ready to lose me, but we still couldn't fully reconcile because I was using. And when I was using, I was angry and aggressive. This didn't help things at all. We kept trying to fix our marriage. We were separated for almost 2 years. Then we both surrendered to God and admitted we could not fix these things on our own. He got sober and then began helping me get clean. He helped me get into clean and sober housing, and I began my journey of getting and staying clean and sober. By the time I started getting clean, my kids had lost all faith in me and wouldn't even speak to me. I feared I had lost them forever. I started going to some AA meetings with him, but I needed more, so I started NA meetings. We met in a church and used God's name in the Serenity Prayer, but when I was told I couldn't read a passage about love out of the Bible because it was against their policy and they didn't want to offend anyone, I left in tears and refused to go back. It was against everything I believed. One night I was talking to my husband's cousin about what had happened, and she told me about Celebrate Recovery. This Celebrate Recovery, in fact, and asked me if she could take me. I agreed, and I am so glad I did. I began regularly attending Celebrate Recovery and felt like I was exactly where God wanted me. I had found my forever family. My mom was so happy to have her daughter back and wanted to support me and began attending CR regularly with me. I am pleased to say today she and I are best friends. I got a sponsor, and the Celebrate Recovery meeting I went to was small, and they let me lead worship after about 8 months of regular attendance. They asked me to join a step study, which I did, but we didn't get far into it before COVID-19 started and shut down our meetings. Not long after that, my wonderful sponsor passed away from complications of COVID-19. And I was now over a year clean, and my mom and I were the only women in attendance. I was given a crash course in leadership and asked to act as women's leadership, as there was no one else, and asked to try to find a step study to join ASAP. At the time, there were no step studies starting anytime soon in the area, Slowly, my CR began to grow, and soon we had enough women to just go ahead and start a step study. As soon as we started, the Lord provided leaders with experience and several new sisters in Christ. More importantly, I was able to focus on myself and heal. I worked my Christ-centered 12 steps, and boy, do I feel better, lighter, freer, and transformed. I have been redeemed, and that's a lifetime of pain lifted off my shoulders and my heart. If you have not been through a step study, I highly recommend you do. You won't regret it, I promise. If you are new to Celebrate Recovery, welcome. We're so glad you made it. Get plugged in, get phone numbers, volunteer to help wherever you can, because a little accountability goes a long ways. Today, I have a relationship with both my children again, both my adult children, and I am proud and privileged to say my daughter and I are best friends. I never in my life thought of myself as a leader, but God had other plans for me, and his transformation made me who I am today. A worship leader, one of the women's leaders, a faithful wife, mother, daughter, sister, accountability partner, sponsor, and friend. Remember to take it one day at a time and take time for self-care. Isaiah 40:31 says, "They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not grow weary, and they shall walk and not faint." This was my dad's favorite verse, and now it is also one of my favorites. The peace I have through Jesus Christ is priceless. I began my healing journey with Philippians 4:13 as my mantra. It says, "I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me." Little by little, one day at a time, I leaned on Jesus, and he will not fail me. He will never leave me nor forsake me. For the first time in my life, I know my dad would be proud of the woman I have become. He was a wonderful example of how to be a God-fearing, loving parent. 3 John 1:4 says, "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. I know that to be true as my daughter is walking in the way and was even attending Bible college for youth ministry before she got pregnant and plans to finish after the baby's born. Today, I still lead worship at Sunnyside Celebrate Recovery, and I am on the core team as ambassador coach. I am a sponsor and accountability partner. I am very involved in various groups at my church, including serving in children's ministry as a Sunday school teacher, something I never saw myself doing. But the Lord knew, and he has chosen me to continue the works he began in me. I also have a good relationship. Sorry, I've got some redundancy here. I have been clean and sober for 6 years. I quit smoking cigarettes 4 years ago, and I'm proud to say that I have not had suicidal thoughts in almost 11 years. Are things perfect in my life today? No, of course not, but it is possible. My marriage was reconciled, and we are going strong now. Married for 9 years, and together for almost 12. My husband has recently relapsed on alcohol, but I have faith the Lord will deliver him from his alcoholism once again. Today, my ongoing mantra and working my 12-step, Philippians 1:6, I am sure that the good work God began in you will continue until he completes it on the day when Jesus Christ comes again. Thank you for letting me share.